Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Graham Hart Show with me, Briser, here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of grism.blogspot.com, where Mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company, folks, and if you'd like to join us in the chat room, click on the HTML5 chat link at the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. And I'd also like to welcome listeners of Eurofolk Radio, good to have you all on board, and I'd also like to make it clear to all listening that I reserve all rights to my words, as does my guest. And, it's Monday, December the 9th, 2019, allegedly. And our guest tonight is joining us, let's call it what it is, the Bolshevik Republic of South Africa. And, of course, that's Jan Lamprecht from historyofrude.com. We haven't spoke to Jan for a while, and there's been lots of developments going on down in South Africa, and he's here to talk to us. So, Jan, how are you keeping, sir? It's been a while.
I'm keeping fine, thanks. Fine. in speaking from the Jewish liberal Bolshevik Republic of South Africa, where everybody who's non-white, everyone who's non-white's busy screwing up the country.
Good stuff. So there's been a lot of developments, Jan. I know you put up a few things on your website about a Christian pastor who was arrested for, he wanted to blow up the government, or he wanted to do something. And then there was an Afrikaans lady as well who knew him, and she's been arrested as well. So there's a few things going on. I think there's kind of are we coming to the angry white man stage now in South Africa? What's going on there?
Okay, this is a very interesting story, and I'm trying myself to get more to the bottom of this. And I also just want to make some notes here because... Okay, the main thing here was many weeks ago, I heard through a contact of mine that there was an organization called the Crusaders. So they sound Christian, and Crusaders, you know, the Christian army... Mm-hmm. So all that I heard originally was the guy said to me, listen, there's this organization called the Crusaders. It's run by this guy called Harry Knudsen, and he's got a lot of special forces guys in his group. And he's got some kind of spiritual calling. And what concerned me when I heard the spiritual angle What concerned me was that, are we back to the sidelines again, where you have these never-ending prophecies that don't come true? Is this an ongoing game? Is this guy going to suddenly come and say, you know, God told me to do this and I need to go and do it? And he gets people in on that basis. But in actual, and after that, I kind of, for a while, I was considering even writing a post and saying, you know, I've heard that there's this Christian nutcase and he might just be another Seidlander type, and maybe he's got some guys who've got weapons and he might go and do a stupid thing in the name of prophecy. Because I was thinking that he would say, like, prophecy or God told me or something. He might go and do something stupid and, you know, people should be wary of him. But then after a time, I thought, ignore it. Don't hassle about it. And then suddenly, about 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, I got a message. I got this, because I'm in contact now. I've been building up my contacts here in South Africa and my contacts and my, let's call it my tentacles, into the white right is now increasing nicely, and I'm very pleased with what's coming out of it. And I'm not even able I've not even been able to cover even a tenth of the stuff that's passing by me that people are talking about. I'm still busy sorting my things out, and my own setup is improving. I'm making good headway. But what I wanted to say, just give me a note. I'm also just making notes of things I need to remember to tell you. So anyway, one day I get this video, and the guy says, you know, he's Harry Knussen, he's the leader of Crusaders. And it seems either there are two organizations or Crusaders has got two names for it. The other name for it is Christian Resistance Movement. And then they also have which is CRM, and then they've got NCRM, which is national, which I take to be National Christian Resistance Movement. So it's a good video. It's among the many things that I need to put out. I tell you, I get so many things, and I don't even get to put out even 1% of the stuff that I get. It just comes in at such a pace. Anyway, this guy in this video, he was dressed in a military uniform, South African military uniform, and he said, you know, I'm Harry Knussen, I'm the general in charge of Christian Resistance Movement or Crusaders. And it was actually very well done. He went and he said that he started attacking. How this came to light was, he started by attacking other white right-wing leaders. So he attacked other white right-wing leaders. He said, listen, there's lots of you who belong to organizations, you're paying your monthly subscriptions, and they are going to, and those organizations are there to defend you. They are defense organizations. Well, I have an attacking organization. He was talking in Afrikaans, so he said, aanvals organisasie. So he said, I've got an attacking organization. We don't wait to defend. We're going to attack. And I'm like, whoa, that's interesting, but I kind of like it because I'm sick and tired of people waiting around. Harry caused a lot of stress among the white right wing. And when I listened, and he was attacking these leaders because he was saying that all these white leaders are doing nothing. Everybody just has meetings and nothing ever happens. There's no plan of action. And he says, you know, we should be attacking the government. We need to attack the government. And he was engaged in a lot of politics. So he was pissing off some people. Among the people he pissed off was Isaac van Sale of the Boer Legion. And When I listened to his message, he was basically telling, he was basically trying to get all the whites in the white right to come together with him. And he was doing it by attacking their leaders, telling them their leaders are useless and their organizations are a waste of time. He said, come to me. You don't have to pay anything. Come join me. We're gonna attack. We're going to do something. We're going to take this country back. And it was definitely a militant video. But what I liked was the different tone. I liked the fact that for once, somebody was not just sitting on their asses waiting until kingdom come. And he angered a lot of people, that the leaders of the right wing got so angry with him because they were seeing him as a divisive force. He was attacking the leaders of the organizations and basically trying to steal all their people from them. And after this, I actually went to the Buddha Legion because I deal with the Buddha Legion. And I said to them, you know, this guy's kind of wild and everything, and I don't know why he wants to do this, but I do like some of what he's saying, because he's saying, you know, instead of sitting around, we should be doing something, and I kind of like that. And where extra stress came into it was that Isaac van Sale, the leader of the Buddha Legion, actually began putting out messages even before this video from Harry Knudsen. He began putting out messages saying that whites should go to the police stations and they should lay charges against people who are inciting violence, that there are people inciting violence. At the time, I did not know that he's specifically referring to Harry Knudsen. But he made many calls where he said, what this guy is saying is treason. Go to the police station, lay charges against this guy, because this is treason and you know, we should not allow illegal stuff to take place. Isaac van Sale, the head of the Buddha Legion, is very much a stickler on staying within the law, which I myself am. I'm all for staying within the law 99% of the time, but I do believe, and I've said to people that I do believe that there comes a time where the white man's going to be pushed into such a corner that you will not be able to just stay within the law. A simple example is land seizure without compensation. The government is going to come and tell you that the farm or property, because it can be a house in the city as well, eh? Can be anything, can be a business, can be anything. The government can come to you and say to you, listen, you are occupying your farm or house illegally, and we're going to take it from you now, and we're paying you nothing. That is basically where this government is going. And so part of my argument is you can't always stay within the law. Yes, we must try and stay within the law as much as we can, and we need to in order to function. But the day will come. I can't tell you when that day is going to be, but the day will come where the white man's got his back against the wall and he's got no room to maneuver, and the government has set up the laws so that whether you move left or right or forwards or backwards, you are going to be breaking the law. If you try to stay in your house, you'll be doing it illegally. And the other question is, even if you do your politics, how far can you go? And the rest of you guys in England and Ireland and in America, everybody is moving into this same space where you can do things that are allowed by the law, but what is allowed by the law will not allow you to win, okay? You cannot go onto public forums. You will not get access to the BBC or to CNN. You will not be able to win. The moment that you move into bigger things, you will be stopped in one way or another.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in there, Jan. Actually, what you're saying, self-defense is well and truly within the law. Maybe not their law, but your God-given inalienable rights. You have every right to defend yourself, and that's what it's coming down to. You know? if the government are coming to steal your land and kill your family or whatever, you have every right to do whatever means, well, by any means necessary, to defend yourself. And no man can tell you you're wrong to do that. None. So I would say that it's, you're still well and truly within the law, but it's a very last resort thing, you know. But as you said, when push comes to shove, yeah, it could go that way. Most of us don't want it to go that way. Most of us like to sort this out peacefully. But as I said, if you push people far enough where their lives and the lives of their family and their property and everything is at stake, they will defend themselves. That's what we've always done down through history.
Well, what has happened also is that the government comes and makes it difficult. Like when you get a firearm, when you get a firearm license, among the things that you are told is they've got some weird quirks in the South African firearm law that even if somebody is coming to attack you, you are limited in how you can defend yourself. To put it in a more technical way, if you shoot somebody who's attacking you, the police can put you up on a charge of murder, even though you were being attacked. And I know people who've been in such a situation and got off it. Like I know a man whose wife was being attacked, and he ran out. He had CCTV, and he could see blacks attacking his wife in the driveway, and he ran out with a shotgun and he blew the blacks away. Mm-hmm. And they obviously charged him with murder and everything, but then because it was very clear what was happening, they then withdrew the charges. But there are whites who have defended themselves, who got into trouble. And specifically, in a technical way, I'll explain to you, if a guy comes at you with a knife and you shoot him, then that is murder. That is how this thing works. Mm. So they've got like these grades which make it, now in the heat of the moment when someone's attacking you, if you have a gun on you but you don't have a knife on you, what do you do? You know, so the government does make laws that bring us into very fuzzy areas, and that's the important thing that I'm trying to get to. They're making it so that gets ever more tricky and difficult, that's just what I'm kind of trying to say there. Anyway, returning to Harry Knudsen, so there was this fight going on, and it was now between the leaders, and then this Harry Knudsen video came out, and I watched the video, and I decided to contact him, and it took me a while, but eventually my contacts got me through to him. I got hold of his second in charge, who apparently is a professor, actually. And I got hold of the guy and I said, I want to speak to Harry Knudsen. Anyway, eventually I got hold of Harry. And Harry was quite cagey. And I managed to get hold of him on the phone, and we were messaging each other. And I said to him, listen, I've watched your video and I'm very sympathetic to your cause. I'm very sympathetic. I agree with a bunch of stuff. But you know, why don't you come? I've got a show. Why don't you come and we talk? And there are questions I want to ask you. Because among the things that came out in that video was that Harry was starting to say that we need to take back South Africa now. He said he's promised to take back South Africa before the end of 2019. And we haven't got much time, and we must do it now. When I listened to that part of the video, I was very concerned by that. Him saying that it has to happen now. That concerned me, and I told him that. And I basically offered him an interview, and he didn't respond much. And I tried to give him background because, you know, people also don't trust each other. So I said to him, this is me. This is what I stand for. These are my websites. I come from Rhodesia. The one thing that Harry communicated back to me was that he was born in Kwekwe, which is in Rhodesia. He's a bit older than me, so he must have been born in the time of Rhodesia. Whether he grew up in Rhodesia, I do not know. Then, but this thing of that we are going to attack and we must do it now, that bothered me because I was wondering whether there's something going on. Are government agents involved in this? Then what happened was about a day later, he sent out a second video. In this video, he wasn't in a military uniform. He was just talking about Christianity. And he said that basically that if you're a Christian, that you mustn't expect God to come and do everything for you. God has given you a mind. God has given you free will. If there are things that you don't like, you must take care of them. Now, just some more background about Harry himself. He apparently carried a crucifix through South Africa a year or two ago. He like physically walked and carried a crucifix. And I don't know what distance, but it sounds like this man walked maybe even hundreds of miles, if not further. So this guy, and this guy is a pastor. He's a genuine pastor. So in this other clip, he was sending a message to Christians, and his message was, listen, if there are things that are wrong and you're a Christian, you got to get up off your butt and go and do something about it. Don't expect God to take care of every tiny little thing. God's got more important things to do. And if that's a basic summary of that audio. And that was also an interesting one because it gave me insight into his thinking, because a lot of the Christians in South Africa are Calvinists, and they are very much believers that the future is preordained. That is why these prophecies are so important to them. And that is why these Seidlanders and Simon Roche and Gustav Müller, they were able to tap into these prophecies endlessly, because they carry on and say, oh, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. So when they're busy with those prophecies, then everybody says, okay, cool. You know, we don't have to do anything. God is going to do it for us. God is going to create the situation that's going to allow us to do stuff. And they've been talking like that for 20 years now. And Harry is now coming with a totally different angle, which is interesting. Anyway, so then what happened was the stress levels were high. I also told people, I actually sent out a very long voice message. I spread a voice message that was about 45 minutes long, where I was talking, and I did this about 2 days before Harry was arrested. And in the voice message, I was saying to people that my biggest concern with Harry is that he's talking about taking action now, that Harry said, we haven't got much time, we must take action now. And I'm concerned by that. I also, from my previous contacts, had heard that when the Boeremach were taken down, and we'll get back to the Boeremach, when the Boeremach were taken down in 2003, that it was the result of certain people inside the Boeremach, and these people were actually pushing these Christian prophecies, that there were people telling them, that there was a person telling them that the time has come to start a race war, and the time has come to start a race war, and they must do this. This is what God wants. This will enable the prophecies to be fulfilled. And those Boeremach people, as far as I understood from one of my sources, those Boeremach people were actually pushed into action by a Christian who was like, let's call it a spiritual leader. This Christian never got, this Christian was never arrested. This Christian never went to jail. But I'm told that this Christian was the motivating force in the Burmah. And that this was what kind of pushed them over the edge. So I was sending out a message saying to people that I'm concerned that either the same Christian force is back at work behind Harry, or that there are government agents who are actually pushing this, saying, do this, do this. Because I knew a guy. I once met an old Afrikaans guy, and he'd been in the right wing in the past, and we were talking, and he said he'd been in jail for 2 years for right-wing activities. So I said to him, how was it that you got into jail? So he said to me, well, what happened was he used to belong to this group of whites, and every week they would meet and they would discuss the problems in the country, and they'd look at how the country's going, and they were unhappy about where this country was going. And he said they would just meet and talk, and they'd be unhappy, and they'd talk about things, but they didn't do anything further. Then one day, one of the guys in the meeting said, listen, man, we got to stop all this talking. We got to go and do something. You know, stop all this talking. Let's do something. And so they said, oh, okay, yeah, let's maybe think up something. And so then they started thinking up a plan, a military plan. And just as they were about to execute the plan, they were all caught by the police. And it turned out that the very man who'd sat in the meetings and said, we must do something, he was a cop. And so basically it was a police sting. And so all these people were captured and they were thrown into jail. But if it hadn't been for this cop pushing the edge, they would never have done it. They would have been unhappy, but they wouldn't have done it. So that was my kind of feeling about Harry Knudsen in the days before he was arrested, that there's some kind of force pushing him. I didn't think it was him himself, but maybe it was. But I was very concerned that there could be other agents in that organization pushing them into doing it just so that they could nab them and entrap them. And that's why I hated that whole thing of we've got to do it now. It made me feel very uncomfortable. But I said to him, you can come, I'll interview you, we can talk, you can answer. And I even extended the invitation to Isaac van Sal of the Buddha Legion. Everybody declined, and Isaac van Sal put out his own message via his own organization. But Harry declined, and I kind of left it at that. Then I kind of lost interest. And then there had been rumors prior to this that people in the Crusaders had been arrested. But these were rumors. No arrests had ever taken place. And then about, like I say, 2 days after I sent my long voice message, and after I thought, okay, if nobody's interested, then nobody's interested. Then suddenly I heard that Harry Knudsen had been arrested early in the morning, and that they'd arrested in total three men. And then what happened was then I went and checked, and I saw later in the day, yes, it's real. It is true. And it's actually made the news. And that was then when I saw that there's a Christian woman on the run. There may actually be two Christian women on the run. One of them might yet still be getting away. Now, just before Harry's arrest, at about the same time that I put out that other voice message, at the same time as Harry's arrest, at the same time as I put out the other voice message, I got yet another voice message, and it was from a white woman. And the white woman was saying that, I think she was saying that Harry had been arrested. I think she said Harry had been arrested. And she said that people must go forward with the attack. The attack was due on Black Friday. I assume you've got Black Friday around the world. It seems to be for selling, for sales before Christmas. Anyway, this woman sent out this message, and she said the attack must carry on. And I began to form the opinion that later they said that they're hunting for this woman. So I formed the opinion, and I think it's the correct opinion, that that voice message is of the woman that is of the woman Rihanna Hamans, who was later arrested on the Friday. So they nabbed Harry on the Thursday. They nabbed her on the Friday. And that's when I put out the message and even a video saying, well, if this woman is still on the run, you know, people should help her. I know it's illegal to say you must help somebody who's wanted, but, you know, whites need to start sticking together, you know. So I went and I dug into her background, and I began to realize that she was an estate agent. I formed the opinion that she was an estate agent, but I didn't put that out on my website. In fact, I've not put any of that out on my website. Then I wasn't quite sure whether I should put it out. So I thought, okay, maybe I've got another woman that sounds like her. So on the Monday, I went and I checked again. And on the Monday, I immediately saw that all the stuff that I'd seen for that estate agent had been removed. So then I knew I had the right person. Luckily, I'd kept a screenshot of one of the pages where she was listed, and I've got it. So I kept that, and I was then able to track more stuff into her personal life. I found her Facebook page. I looked at her stuff, and I began to form the opinion that this woman wasn't exactly poor. And this is the same for Harry Knudsen. He owns at least two homes. But it was interesting that these Christians wanted to go on the attack. And what I'm trying to get to is that when you look at this woman's life, she was a functioning person. She was a normal functioning person with a day job. She had children. She didn't have a husband, but she had two grown-up children, and she clearly was making a good living. If you look at the pictures of her house, I've never seen anybody with so many dogs. The woman must have owned at least about a dozen dogs. She loves animals. Her house looks good. This is not somebody that you would think is a terrorist, and yet that is what they're going to charge these people with. And I began to ask myself questions, and also the guy who was second in charge, as far as I understood, he was a professor. So, my initial look at this group of people is that these are normal whites. They are not criminals. They are not naturally violent. Something is making them lose it completely. And this is where it's now getting interesting. Now, among the other things that happened was the moment the arrests happened, and so far, I think four people have been arrested. One of the people has been given bail. The person got bail very cheaply. They claim, they say they found weapons. They say they found, they talk about an explosives factory. They say that people were manufacturing explosives. So they say that, and then they say that the government has been monitoring and spying on this group for 2 years. There is something about this case that makes me wonder whether, in fact, the government had been spying on them for 2 years. There are things, people are asking lots of questions, and people are also saying, is Harry himself a setup? Is he secretly working for the government? Are these Christians themselves You know, is this a setup to capture as many whites as possible, arrest as many whites as possible? I must tell you that there are questions that I have. One of the questions that I'm having in my mind is whether, in fact, the government had infiltrated them to the degree that the government claims. I have a few things that I'm not quite sure of, but I have a few things that are making me doubtful, and there are some strange things in the Harry Knussen story. Harry may have been more successful than we know. There are things that, there are loose ends that still need to be tied up. Among the things I will tell you is one day somebody came to my website and they said to me that if you actually look into Harry Knussen, and it was an anonymous person, a person with a fake email address, because I tried to contact the person and the email address doesn't exist. But someone left me a message and said that, in fact, if I were to dig into the past of Harry Knussen, that I would find that Harry Knussen comes from Rhodesia, knows about Rhodesia, that Rhodesia is his motivating force, just like it is my motivating force, that I will find that Harry Knussen was also very friendly to the blacks. There's a Christian political party in South Africa called the ACDP. It's the African Christian Democratic Party. I think ACDP, not ACDC.
ACDC, we're a rock band around
a Jewish rock band.
Can I just jump in there? That's all very interesting, very intriguing, actually, what's going on there. And it's interesting to see these, as I say, these Christian guys who are standing up and saying enough is enough. And as we know, a lot of Christians, a lot of Christians are very passive, and you know, if we pray to God, that God will save us and all the rest of it. But in fact, you know, the whole idea of praying, as far as I'm concerned, is that you get some kind of inspiration to get you, as you say, get up off your butt and do something. And I think that's what's happened. That's what's speaking to him. Maybe God is speaking to him somehow and saying, get up off your arse and do something. And he's doing it. And the problem, of course, is if he is inciting violence and there's intent behind that, that's where they can get you. And that's where he needs to be very careful. So, but I can understand completely where they're coming from. I think they have to come and attack you first before then you can actually say, right now I have a right to defend myself. And if you do defend yourself and they arrest you, then there's one thing, you know, like what Graham even did, you know. We've actually refined that a bit further and just say, I reserve all rights because you have a right to defend yourself. And you leave it at that. You don't say anything else. So if you ever get in touch with them, and just, I can go through that more with you afterwards on another chat sometime and tell you how that can be done. It's, as I said, we just, people need to kind of keep calm a bit and not let this go too far. And, but at least there's something stirring now, and people are kind of just drawing a line in the sand and saying no more. I mean, this just brings me back to what happened in the Boer War. The same thing, okay? They were being attacked. These were peaceful people living on the land, and the Crown came in and decided we're going to take it all, and they fought back, right? At which they had every right to do. So, you know, we could be heading to another type of situation like that. And we all know that the Boers defended themselves extremely well back in those days, even though they were beaten in the end. But, I mean, they did stand up for themselves, and, you know, you've got to admire that. And that's what we have to do. At some point, we have to do it.
I'll tell you where the grey area is. And the grey area also applies to those of us on the internet. The grey area is that where the Jews and the communists move in, is that they get to a point where you're not attacked openly, that they don't send the army or the police in and they don't come and exterminate a whole suburb of whites. But where you've got like what seems to be a clandestine war. The farm murders is the perfect example, where we've now had 25 years. We've had 25 years of mysterious ongoing murders of whites one by one. And there is some evidence to suggest that there are political links and so on, but you can't quite put your finger on the button. So you can't quite get to the point. And the government itself doesn't declare war on you. So the government says, so if you say to the government, as the whites have done, if you say to the government, listen, you know, there's farm murders exists. The government openly says that farm murders don't exist. There's no such thing. They don't acknowledge the existence of such a concept. They say, no, it's just normal crime. There's nothing weird about it. But the whites have documented all the different aspects of it, including the high incidence per person and the fact that this is completely abnormal and doesn't match with normal crime. So you find yourself, you see, that's the problem in this communist world. And in Southern Africa especially, this is in a high state where the blacks have been trained. The blacks were trained by the Russians, by the Chinese, and the Jews assist them. The blacks have been trained in the art of sneaking up on you and doing things to you and killing people, stealing stuff. There are weird things that happen, and then there are weird things that happen, and they always happen to be anti-white. I'll give you another example. A young Boer farmer was telling me, and I did an interview with him. A young Boer farmer told me, for example, that due to the extreme drought, there was 200 million rand that was supposed to go in drought relief to the farmers, and most of the white farmers would have got it, right? And then suddenly the government says, the 200 million rand has gone missing. It's gone missing. We don't know where it is. And so, sorry, you know, you don't get 200 million rand. So you end up in all these borderline situations, and there are lots of them. Crime is another one. Crime is another one where because these things are extensions of the original war. The original war that we had was terrorism. Remember, the government of today, the ANC of today, are themselves terrorists. Mm-hmm. They carried out terrorist attacks on people. They assassinated people, they murdered people, they planted bombs. Every single thing that these whites are accused of, the ANC's done that and much more. So the ANC knows how to do those things. And they are the government of the day. They've got money. Those guys are rich, man. In their personal capacities, these guys are rich. They can form armies of blacks. They can give people guns. Those blacks can be given guns. They can be told to go and do something. The gun that kills somebody, the police won't touch them, etc. In Zimbabwe, this operated at a very, very in a very slick manner. The government had a militia. Mugabe had a militia of 200,000 blacks, and those 200,000 blacks could go and do anything they wanted to do. And if they murdered somebody, and people wanted to take that murder and go to the police, then the police had already been instructed by the government, don't act on this. So somebody comes to the police and says, I want to lay a charge of murder of this and this and this. And then the police would say, oh, okay, this is political. We don't get involved in political stuff. And that was the way they got out of it. So one of the big frustrations of the whites here is that whites here on the ground know lots of things and see lots of things. And you can see the maliciousness of the blacks and the government. Like Julius Malema. Julius Malema has openly gone on national TV, national radio in the past, called for the genocide of white people. Mm-hmm. And everybody heard it. And it even went into the Constitutional Court, and they said, oh, no, that's not hate speech. So this is the borderline world that you live in. And where the problem is, if I may just finish, where the problem is that whites are sitting and waiting for like a declaration of war and an open attack. But the actual fact is that whites are getting killed, and there is no open declaration of war. There is nothing that says we can now fight back. Yeah. We're living in this borderline world. And this borderline world also exists to a degree on the internet. Not as intense, but it is there. In the sense that, you know, oh, everybody's got free speech. And then suddenly Facebook comes and shuts down everybody. YouTube bans everybody. Twitter kills everybody. And they keep on saying, oh, but you whites. It's you whites that are busy with hate speech. Same kind of game where it's always the white is in the wrong. Do you see a bit of what I'm trying to get to?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, do you think there's another thing going on besides the farm murders? They're just making it more and more difficult for farmers to work the land because obviously the profits are way down and they might have to now take out a loan to buy machinery or animal feedstuffs or whatever, you know. And then because things are so tough and tight, they can't afford to pay back those loans, so they come in and foreclose on these farms. Is that happening there as well? Because that's what's happening here. We're seeing a lot of farmers here being hit with that, and they're fighting back. The Irish farmers here are rising up, man, and this is great to see, because these farmers take no shit, and they're pushing back big time, because they've worked the land for generations, you know, and now they've seen there's a direct assault on them. They want to take the land from them, and are making it deliberately very, very difficult for them to make a living. There's no incentive for young farmers now to come onto the land, and because it's not worth it. They're working 7 days a week from early morning to late at night, and they're not getting any return for it. So is that happening there? Do you see that as well? That's another aspect where they're trying to get people.
They are trying a bunch of different things. And there's also something else I just want to tell you as a general theme on farming in Africa, having grown up on a farm myself. One of the things that whites outside Africa do not understand is that in Africa you've got large numbers of blacks who move around your properties and things, and theft is always a problem for the white farmer in Africa. When I was a child, I can tell you, I myself experienced this. In fact, I was almost arrested myself when I was 16 years old because I caught a black in our maize field stealing maize. And I'd noticed that maize was being stolen. I grabbed my dad's shotgun the one day because I realized there's a lot of these people are operating inside the field. And I went and I actually caught a young black, and I beat him. I hit him on the head with the rifle, with the butt of the shotgun. And oh man, I was so almost in trouble. The police came for me. My parents had to do some quick talking to get me off the hook. But trespassing and stealing, common stuff in Africa, which farmers in Europe and America probably don't know about. But I will say that as a general principle, you're talking about the Irish farmers. As a general principle, I'm convinced that Jews are trying to destroy all farmers, all white farmers in the world.
Oh, yeah.
As a general principle. And another place where it's happened to an astounding degree, a shocking degree, and Americans don't seem to even notice it, is that you get these mega corporations buying out and wiping out. The normal farmer cannot compete against a mega Jewish corporation. Mm-hmm. So these mega corporations have driven large numbers of family farms in America out of business. And I've also heard that the federal government has seized large amounts of land, especially in the West. It's like they want to do everything they can to stop whites from getting into the rural lifestyle. And I think that the war on the farmer is because the farmer is normally the toughest person in society. And if there's anybody who's going to fight back, it's farmers.
Absolutely.
And you know what? If you go back into our history as a race, you will see that in ancient Greece, the ancient Greek state, the city-state, that the actual state was held up by farmers. Farmers are responsible not only for civilization, but also for the army that comes with that civilization. The ancient Greeks, their armies were composed of farmers. Same is true for the Romans. So I think that as a general principle, wherever the Jews are busy bringing communism and liberalism, they are looking to destroy farmers. And nowadays, the madness of capitalism is such a thing that the super rich have got carte blanche on anything. And in South Africa, I even did an interview with this Boer guy who knows a lot about farming. He was talking about mega farmers, mega corporations. Do you know that the Jewish-owned Anglo-American mining company is buying up farms?
Right.
They are now farmers.
Mm.
So what you've got is the farmers aren't necessarily – look, farmers have gone into debt and lost their lands and things in the ways that you describe. But we're on to a whole new level now where you've even got mega corporations coming in, and then there are these mega farmers who are very well connected with Jews, and they come and they buy out the other farmers. So, yes, the common farmer is being destroyed in South Africa. The common Afrikaans farmer is being wiped out bit by bit. Definitely.
Well, this is all part of Agenda 21 to get people off the land and move them into cities where they can be controlled. And
Absolutely.
As you say, the mega corporations like Monsanto take over the land, and then they feed us this shitty GMO food. You know, there you go, Goyim. You know, and you know when you look at Monsanto, they're Jews. So you know, there we go again.
It's very dangerous. If I may add, do you know I came across a reference. I came across a reference that I'm not sure which company it is, but there was a company that sold stuff, I think, to people in the Philippines, in Malaysia. And I think those people are Muslim and they're anti-Israel. And do you know that I think it was, I can't remember what it was that was given to them. But they sterilized millions of people,
mm-hmm.
and that I've heard. So I'm very wary of all these companies, all this Jewish technology and science in all these things. The Jew could feed you something that can stop you from having children, and that's death for you.
Yeah,
you know, that's death for our race.
Yeah, and then there's the other thing with these forest fires in Australia, which are still going on now for nearly 2 months, and they're really struggling to put them out. And you have to wonder what with these things, were they started deliberately? Now, I know they're getting hot weather now. It's nearly gone into midsummer there, like it is down where you are. But I heard that the government wanted to build a high-speed rail link between Sydney and Brisbane. And they couldn't do it because the farmers kept objecting. No. So let's do something. Let's burn them out. And that's exactly what they did. And now the plans are going ahead for this high-speed rail link when they eventually put the fires out. Because the farmers are just saying, we've had enough now. We can't deal with this. Our land is destroyed. It's all burnt. Water is all, being evaporated. What's the point of farming the land? We can't do it. The land's been destroyed. This is so insidious. This is just so evil. And this is what they will do. This is the lens they will go to. And
I can add to that. In 2016 and even in 2017, I think, I also followed some stories here in South Africa where all of a sudden farms were being burned down. And it happened across South Africa quickly. And there were people who were eyewitnesses, including helicopter pilots, were eyewitnesses. And they sent out voice messages. They said that they could see blacks starting the fires. Mm-hmm. They could see the people busy with it. They did it a lot. They burned down, they started something like 100 fires in one day. They were burning down farms. They were burning down all sorts of places. Where it hit its peak was there's a town called Knysna, I think it is. And Knysna is a mostly white town. Knysna, 40% of the houses in Knysna were burned down. And that also came as some kind of weird thing. And I myself have looked at arson and fire as a method of war. And yes, I agree with you. It is very possible. The radical liberal, if we could call it that, will stoop to, there is nothing he won't stoop to. And I can quite believe what you're saying about Australia. Quite believe it. Yeah. Very possible.
Yeah. Absolutely,
very.
Yeah.
A typical Antifa type thing. And Antifa by itself, that thing should be banned as a terrorist organization.
Oh, yeah.
There's your Jewish army sitting right in front of you. Mm-hmm. They can carry out illegal activities and they get away with it. And they get people fired from their jobs and destroyed. So, you know, you are fighting a kind of asymmetrical war where the Jew comes at you and you can't quite put your finger on it. You know what I'm saying? Just like those farmers. You can sense it, but you can't say it's like an open declaration of war. So there's got to be a way of fighting against that. Maybe Harry is wrong in declaring war against the government, but maybe we need to find a middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking myself more and more of advice that I can give whites so that we can function better.
One of the main weapons they kind of use against us, I think particularly, I mean, I know the ANC are really going for white people over there, right? But over here, they're using deceptive language and trickery. You know, their word spells. The Jews are very good at that. And they're tricking people into consenting into stuff that they don't even know what they're consenting to. And we got to figure that out. We got to realize, we consented to this stuff, and that was a mistake. Acknowledge we made a mistake, and now say, right, the game is up, guys. We know what you're doing. And it stops now. It stops. And if you come any further, we might have to defend ourselves. We'll see how it goes. We don't want to go there, but push comes to shove, you know? So, yeah, and we're just at the top of the hour. We're going to take a bit of a music break, and we'll come back and talk more. I'm sure lots more to talk about. So, folks, we're going to play a song now. This is a good one, Talk Talk. Life is what you make it. It's just over 4 minutes, and we'll see you back then after this. Okay, folks, welcome back. That was Talk Talk. Life is what you make it. And indeed, that's it. Life is what you make it. And we've got to make it and look after ourselves and do what we need to do to stand up against this. Let's call it what it is. Bullshit, okay? And I'm fed up with it. I've drawn a line in the sand. I know Jan, our guest down in South Africa, Jan Lamprecht is our guest. He's had enough too. Graham's had enough. Most of us here, all the listeners here, we've all had enough. And we've got to start doing stuff now. 2020, I think, is going to be a big year for all of us. We've got to be strong. We've got to stand up for each other, help each other out, get some good information. We've learned an awful lot down through the years, what's going on. A lot of us were kind of confused as to where this is all going, who's doing what, what's going on here and all that. But we're beginning to refine it now, and we're beginning to see exactly what's going on. And once we have that information, that knowledge, now we can use it against them. And, you know, it could come to a crisis situation, but let's take advantage of that crisis situation. And instead of order out of chaos for them, well, it could be order out of chaos for us, you know. We've got to take the lead here now. And I've got to remember, there's far more of us than there are of them. So let's go for it, guys. 2020 is going to be a big year. So Jan, welcome back. We've got lots more to discuss. I mean, you know, as you said, I've had enough, Jan. I know you've had, you know, we just had enough.
I think as I was saying to you, I want to coin my own term here, if I may, racial telepathy. That the more I observe the world, the more convinced I am that that even if you do not talk to other whites, rest assured, other whites feel the same way as you. There are much more of them that feel that way than you realize. I've come to that conclusion. It could be, and I really think it could be a real thing in the sense that people of a similar IQ and a similar value and a similar, because all whites, you know, we as a race, we share lots of things that are our things. The way we view conflict, the way we view honesty, you know, we've got our ethical standards, etc., and our own IQ. And in some ways, when I look at us, I'm convinced that our natural state is we're a warrior race. That our values are the values of people who've fought for what they have. And you can look around our history, you will see we've stood up for ourselves endlessly.
Time and time again.
Our values are the kinds of values that you get in a warrior race. And I think that our IQ being the same, etc., that I've just noticed it more and more. Even if I look back on the past and things that I learn about other whites, I realize, I thought those whites in America were asleep. No, they weren't. Look at those people and what they were doing, and look at those people what they were doing. The main thing that I think where we can learn a lot from each other is that many times the tactics and strategies that whites in one country evolve versus whites in another country are not the same. And therein lies a lot of stuff we can learn. But in terms of our view of how a country should run, we all universally see it exactly the same way. From the steppes of Russia down to freaking the Iberian Peninsula, to America, to Australia, to South Africa, to New Zealand, all white people have got basically the same values. I've spoken to Eastern Europeans. Everybody thinks the same way. There are certain values that are just absolutely a part and parcel of us. And I'm thinking more and more, and even like the Germans and others where there's a lot of cover-up as to and silence and censorship, I'm seeing more and more signs that show me, no, man, no, there are people, they must be so sick they could puke. They must be so sick of this crap, and I'm feeling very positive that global fight back for our race is definitely on the way.
I think it's stamped into our DNA, man, for thousands of years. I think, you know, and I think what's happened, we're a giant that's just kind of fallen asleep at the wheel, and that giant is beginning to wake up, and when it does, well...
it's going to scare a lot of people,
I'm telling you. It sure is, yeah. So we got to be positive here too, you know, we'll be doing doom and gloom, and, you know, we can talk about all these different types of problems and everything, but we're resourceful people, we're creative people, we've got good intelligence, we have critical thinking, we question stuff, we look at things, and once we come together, talk about stuff, we can come up with some fantastic ideas. I mean, I'm seeing some great stuff coming from people, as you said, all around, all white people from all over the place coming out with some fantastic stuff, and it's really positive to see that. So all is not lost yet by any means, and that's why they are so scared. That's why they're coming in with all this hate speech nonsense now.
Oh, yes.
You know, to try and shut us down. But we will not be shut up, and that's the end of it. No way. We will speak our mind, we'll say what we need to say, and that's it. Sorry. You're not going there. End of story.
I totally agree with you. You know, The Jews may have planned white genocide, but it could easily turn into white evolution. And we need, in many respects, especially when I talk to whites in Europe, Europeans especially, and to a lesser degree, the whites of North America, I actually think that in many respects, whites actually need a challenge. We actually need a challenge that allows us to, like, sort of dust ourselves off and really get our brains working. We need a real threat to our existence, actually, because this will awaken the natural beast, the wolf that hides inside of us. And that beast is, when that beast comes out, the people are going to be fleeing for their lives. I'll give you a few basic points. I'm just going to jump through a couple of points, and then you can zoom in on whichever ones you want.
Yeah.
I've also been looking at blacks here in Africa, and especially I've got one. There's only one black that I really talk to from time to time. And he even fled South Africa with this xenophobia. He fled to Zimbabwe and then he came back. And I've also been looking more closely at the news of the blacks. I got to tell you, Bryza, when I look at Zimbabwe, I'm grinning from ear to ear, my friend. Mm-hmm. They may have fucked the whites. But in the end, the whites also fucked them. Mm-hmm. They may have come and removed the last 5,000 white farmers. Do you know, this black was telling me about 40%, about 40% of the population of Zimbabwe can't live inside Zimbabwe. There's no food, no work, nothing.
So
they live here in South Africa. Anyway, this guy fled to Zimbabwe in the xenophobia, and the xenophobia itself wasn't a big success. The xenophobia was an example of black incompetence. They tried to chase away and kill blacks here, and they were themselves not very successful. They only killed about 5 blacks, and I've got film footage where Nigerians in South Africa, Nigerians went and got themselves weapons, and they were going to fight back against the black South Africans.
Yeah, I saw that. It was a couple of months ago.
But anyway, these things are quite fascinating in that I'm looking at how the black economies are imploding. Things are just getting worse. Zimbabwe's on the edge of yet another crisis, and their crises are just getting worse and more chaotic. And everything's imploding, but South Africa is now starting to head down that path. Mm-hmm. Then I look at some of the news reports that the blacks put out. They put out a thing that in Bulawayo, the second biggest city in Zimbabwe, they were saying that they've brought a whole bunch of women together and they've taught them how to make bread. And I thought to myself, oh wow, you've been ruling yourselves for 37 years. And you need to learn yet again how to make bread. You know, you had bread when I was a kid 40 years ago. I once even saw a news report where the Dutch gave them bread making machines. And I was saying to myself, these people have been independent and ruling themselves and voting and saying that they can do everything whites can do. And look at the stupid things that they can't even do.
Yeah.
And just a note about Harry Knudsen. There were some of the whites, especially some of the younger whites here in South Africa, when Harry Knudsen was arrested, and Harry Knudsen openly called for the genocide of blacks. However, he'd been a member of a black political party, Christians, and he apparently even has contacts with blacks in government in this ACDP. So there's a whole bunch of funny things about Harry that I still need to find out. But what one of the whites said was that, you know what? We've had Julius Malema openly calling for the genocide of whites many, many times. We've had Blackland First openly calling for genocide of whites. It's about time that we've got one white man who's called for the genocide of blacks. Let the blacks know that it's not just you that can threaten us. Mm-hmm. And Burumakh, I've got some additional stuff on Burumakh where I'm talking to people. And Burumakh is interesting. It turns out that in the Burumakh, what I never knew was, do you know that the Burumakh, when the Burumakh was 400 whites who basically were going to start a race war, regardless of the prophetic motivations, one thing that I have managed to get, and I'm waiting for the document, is that apparently the Burumakh followed all the proper procedures of a state. The Burumakh actually sent documentation to the ANC following proper legal processes, stating what their issues were, stating that they need to be resolved, and stating that it, if it is not resolved, that they will declare war on the government. And apparently all of those documents exist. They followed all the proper protocol. So they, and where this is important is that the Burumakh have gone and said that legally they are not terrorists. They are not terrorists. They are prisoners of war because they followed the proper procedures for declaring war. And there's something like 62,000 pages of documentation from the trial. It was an 11-year trial. The trial exceeded the length of a trial. It actually broke the constitutional laws of South Africa. So the Burumakh is very interesting, and I'm waiting to get more information on that, because that stuff has been tried and tested legally. And there's a lot of interesting things out of there that could be of use and knowledge for whites. But the guys are still sitting in jail. The trial was rigged, same old thing. The big thing, the two big things in South Africa that are going down now, there are three things, actually four. The one thing is that vast amounts of capital have been fleeing South Africa this year. They say that something like, I think it's 141 billion rand, which is just a bit less than 10 billion US dollars, has left South Africa this year. Normally in a normal, in the days when I believed in free market economics, before I realized that it's actually Jewish economics, in the days when I still believed in free market economics, I would have said this is a bad thing. Now I say this is a good thing. Because once the super rich, that money that is fleeing are the rich and the super rich. And the less interest the super rich have in the country, the more the whites who live here can regain control for themselves. In fact, I have my own theory that if we can survive long enough, if we can just hold ourselves together long enough, that in actual fact, what's coming is going to be a boom in small white business. You won't believe how many whites in South Africa are sitting in their homes and working from home. You can now go from suburb to suburb and you'll see everybody's operating from their house. They're turning their houses into a business. Everybody, you're just seeing it all over the show. Obviously, the vast majority of whites still work for a proper multiracial, Jewish, liberal, anti-white company. But you'll be shocked at the number of whites who are working from home now. And it just keeps increasing. And you can see that it's like they're moving forward. In certain suburbs, it's massive. And I believe that whites may yet survive, and whites might be the only booming economy in time to come. But you cannot. these homegrown businesses cannot compete against big multiracial corporations, and they cannot compete against mega corporations. So I'm happy when I see money fleeing the country, because the less profits the Jews and the rich are making, the less they're going to be messing with us. Let them bugger off. But that's the one thing. The other one that's a big thing in the news is South African Airways is collapsing again. South African Airways is so inefficient. I think they've got about 9 times as many staff per passenger as any airline in the world. That's really? How inefficient they are. And this is also, but I can tell you something, Bryzer. This is how the entire corporate world in South Africa was. When I worked in the corporate banking and in the corporate world in South Africa, I saw how the blacks and the Indians and the coloreds bring in all their buddies and they create more jobs for themselves. But they are sucking off of an entity that can only take so much load. And I noticed how whites were actually cutting jobs and blacks were actually increasing the number of workers. Not only are they increasing the number of workers, they're also demanding more pay. They're constantly demanding higher salaries. And my belief is that the Jewish liberal black experiment in business is going to fail. And SAA is just one of those. Eskom, the electricity supplier, has 3 times the number of staff that it actually needs. So this is how all the companies in South Africa are, all of them. They have got much more staff than they should be allowed to have. And they are way beyond international standards. So it shows you how inefficient they are and how loaded down with costs they are. The blacks just have children. The blacks just increase in numbers. The blacks just want more money, more jobs, higher increases. I reckon the blacks are going to break. The blacks are going to break business. And I think the Jewish liberal black thing is starting to fall apart. Mm-hmm. The biggest current thing that's hit us in the last 2 weeks is load shedding. Eskom has suddenly, yet again, out of the blue, come with massive load shedding, but this time it looks like it's worse than before. It may be that we're on the edge again, on the brink again, and it's interesting how it happens. The load shedding hit us about a week ago, and we've had it quite intensely. In fact, as I'm sitting here, I have my inverter and battery bank ready so that if the power goes out, because it goes out any time of day or night, any time. And I myself have hacked together my own solar setup here at home. I originally had a generator, but I decided in 2015 I really need to start hacking together solar, because solar and batteries will allow you to run for longer and it's cheaper. And I learned how to do everything, Bryzer. I climb on the roof. I put up my own solar panels. If you had to see a picture of my office, you'd just see wires all over the show. It doesn't look pretty at all. But I've been experimenting. I've got lighting that runs off my batteries. I've got solar power that powers my computers and my internet. And when my power goes off, I've been able to function day or night, regardless of the power outages. I've not missed a beat. Brilliant. But you should see how unprepared my non-white neighbors are. Like, yeah. I've got a new non-white neighbor on the one side, and every time that there's going to be load shedding in our area, the family gets into their car and they drive to another suburb to go and visit people where there are lights. And these non-whites are so unprepared. And it's actually the whites who are more prepared and the whites who are thinking in a prepper way.
Yeah.
The only thing that's bad about the whites is that whites still believe that we need to save things like ESCOM and we need to save different things because they themselves have not gotten off the grid in large enough quantity. And the problem is, the reason why South Africa does not collapse in its entirety is because when it gets really bad, whites come in and they fix everything.
Yeah.
And that is what will probably happen yet again. However, it is pretty bad. My niece sent me a thing. They've got like schedules of how bad the load shedding is. They've got schedule one, schedule two. My niece says to me that they say we're moving into schedule six. And I think schedule six is almost when we're on the edge of total collapse. So I personally wish we would hit total collapse. I truly wish. But whites are
still... You say that because that would spur people into action, particularly white people. Is that why you're saying that?
Yes.
They need a good stick up the backside, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I'm a believer. That's why I'm a believer. Worse is better. The whites are very capable, and that is why... That's why I believe let things collapse in their entirety. And I want to tell you, it's getting wilder and wilder. Another thing I saw today that could open up a whole new angle as well is I don't know if I told you that I believe that the president of South Africa, Ramaphosa, that I believe he's a black who converted to Judaism.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me, but I don't know. Tell me more, Jan. Tell me more. Why do you think that?
I think that for many reasons, the original idea came to me from my when I had Jewish friends. This is before my awakening in 2012. In a period somewhere from about 2010 to 2012, my Jewish friend told me one day he was boasting about Jews and all the things that Jews are doing. And one day he boasted and he said to me, a very important black man has converted to Judaism. So I said to him, oh, and by the way, you probably know that converting to Judaism is not like becoming a Christian. It's not like a Christian just says, I take Jesus as my Lord and Savior, and bang, you're a Christian. It doesn't work like that with Jews. With Jews, you've got to go through a long story. These Jews who want diversity for us, they've got a lot of things that before you can become a Jew. You've got to go and you've got to write exams. They've got to monitor you. There's a whole bunch of things, rabbis and everybody, they've got to watch you. It's a long, long, long-winded story. They do not even encourage people to become Jews. It's a very long-winded story to become a Jew. And I'd spoken to Jewish friends, and they told me about the procedure. And so here was this, my Jewish friend saying to me one day, this very important black man has converted to Judaism. So I said to him, okay, who is it? And he said, no, I can't tell you. And I had this discussion with him a couple of times. I said to him, come on, man, just tell me. I won't put it on my website, but just tell me the guy's name. And my Jewish friend completely refused to tell me who it is. I thought, well, maybe it's the guy who like runs the Reserve Bank, you know, Tito Mboweni. Maybe it's him. But the reality was that I began to suspect that he's Jewish in recent years is Ramaphosa. And I know the first time it started hitting me was when he became the vice president, suddenly a Jewish rabbi went and blessed him. And that has never happened before. And then I noticed that he's big buddies with the chief rabbi of South Africa. The chief rabbi is the top Jew in the country. The chief rabbi of South Africa is personal friends with him. The two of them get together, they talk, they visit each other at their houses, they call each other. Both of them have openly stated this. Then I did a bit of research, and I was astounded to discover that the Jews are constantly in their Jewish newspapers, they are showing Ramaphosa, and when he's with the Jews, he's grinning from ear to ear. And he's the only black man among the Jews.
Yeah, well, he's a very rich man too, isn't he, Jan? So
yes,
you know, yes. If you're friends with the Jews, you're going to be rich, okay? You know, but then they could stab you in the back. They could stab you in the back too if you're going to go against them, you know.
But
yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all, man. That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah,
very interesting. Now I want to tell you, I think this is deeper than anything else. I think that if he converted to Judaism, now it means that he and the Jews operate as one team. And you will see all kinds of weird things that Ramaphosa can do that not Mandela or anybody else could do. And you will see the liberal newspapers right down to the business the best business websites and newspapers singing praises to this guy like he's a god. And here's where it gets really interesting. So I thought to myself, and it also has become apparent that this thing of seizing the farms without compensation, that the real plan is to bring in foreign businesses, especially mining companies. It looks like they want to wipe out the white farmers and replace them with these international mining companies and Jews, right? Mm-hmm. So all these mega corporations are back with a vengeance, all right? However, I saw something today that really blew my mind, and I'm going to watch this thing. It turns out that about a week or two ago, top blacks in the African National Congress, top blacks, confronted Ramaphosa in a meeting. Mm-hmm. And these top blacks spoke to Ramaphosa about his, quotes, white friends, because the Jews are seen as whites, okay? Mm-hmm. They said that they are very concerned about these deals that Ramaphosa is doing with his, quotes, white friends, and that Ramaphosa is also destroying the businesses, because the blacks using black economic empowerment, have been basically sucking off of government contracts. So blacks have been making unbelievable sums of money by getting government contracts for themselves and their buddies. It seems that Ramaphosa is stopping the handing over of these contracts to blacks, and he's starting to hand it to Jews.
Right.
So these blacks, these high-ranking blacks, mm-hmm. who are hardcore communists and racists, some of them, mm-hmm. these mm-hmm. high-ranking blacks confronted Ramaphosa. And they said to him, "What are you doing here, you and your white friends?" And these blacks have started talking, these high-ranking blacks have started talking about Ramaphosa getting ready to move out of the ANC and Ramaphosa to become an entity by himself beyond the ANC, and that he's going to kill the ANC.
Wow.
Now let me tell you something. The Jews have made three moves. There have been three moves that have been made in South Africa by the Jews to take control of South African politics. Most people do not understand these things. The first move was when Thabo Mbeki fought against Jacob Zuma. Zuma was a commie. Mbeki was loved by the Jews. My Jewish friends loved him. The Jews love Mbeki. Mm-hmm. Mbeki went and he stabbed Zuma in the back. And when he did it, he tried to take the ANC. He tried to take the ANC out of communist influence. The communists spotted this. The black communists spotted this move. They turned on Mbeki and they threw Mbeki out, because the ANC's got a very funny constitution. Apparently this is like a constitution that the communists in Eastern Europe had. They've got a constitution that says that the president of the country, the president of the country is not elected by the people. The president of the country is chosen by the ANC itself. So the ANC can decide to do what they call a recall of the president. And they used it against Mbeki. They suddenly said to Mbeki, you are no longer the president of South Africa. They do this at their national conference, they vote on it, and they removed Mbeki as the president. And they put Zuma in as the president. This is an ANC political thing they can do. And the communists came back with a vengeance. And I was probably the only person in the country writing about this and warning about this at the time that it happened. Nobody saw it coming. And then next thing is they kick out Mbeki, they put Zuma back in, and Mbeki's out, man. Mm-hmm. Then the Jews made another move. And now the Jews made another move. The Jews and the rich, the Jews and the white rich made another move on the ANC. The other move was a while later, they went and they got a large number of the members of parliament of the ANC, a huge chunk of them. I'm not sure if it was like a quarter or a third of the members of parliament of the ANC to all resign from the ANC. And they created a new political party called COPE, COPE. Oh, yeah. This thing was done. You could see huge money went into this thing. And you could see the rich and the Jews were deeply involved in this. So they got all these top blacks who were known, who had been voted for by the black electorate, to form a new political party that was backed by the rich, and they were going to take on the ANC. Well, when the communists saw that one coming, they set the ANC Youth League on them. And they unleashed the ANC Youth League. And the Youth League said, COPE is going to be stillborn. And when COPE went and started talking to your supporters and you're campaigning. When COPE was busy campaigning, the ANC Youth League would come in and they would tear the events apart. They would beat the blacks, they chase them away, they smashed them. COPE was totally destroyed. COPE now has got like 1% or 0.5% of the power. The ANC wiped out COPE totally. So Mbeki's move to detach the ANC from the communists was destroyed by the communists. COPE was destroyed by the communists. Mm-hmm. Now they are talking about Ramaphosa moving and creating life beyond the ANC. I want to tell you, these black commies, they're going to go to war on this. If Ramaphosa thinks that the Jews are going to be able to protect him, if Ramaphosa thinks the Jews and the white rich are stronger than the ANC, they're in for a surprise. ANC will tear them apart. So what is beautiful about it is I want to watch this develop, because if it does, it will be yet another clash between the super rich, the liberals, the Jews, and the blacks. And common whites have got nothing to do with this. Yeah. And I predict that the Jews and the liberals are going to lose. The ANC is going to I think my initial thoughts are that if Ramaphosa hands a company to his Jewish buddies, I suspect that the blacks will tear that company apart. They'll have strikes, they'll do damage, they'll fuck it up. So that could be a whole new twist. Anyway,
there's some similarities there between what's going on with Trump now and this impeachment stuff. Okay, Now, as we all know, Trump surrounded himself by Jews, by Shabbat Lubavitchers, and a lot of them were Ukrainian Jews, and Trump called out what Joe Biden was doing and his son in Ukraine, and they were making, you know, loads of money, all sorts of shenanigans going on there. And the Jews have now turned on Trump, and I don't know if you've seen that video by an organization called True News, where they listed all these people who were calling for Trump's impeachment. Every single one of them was a Jew.
So they're
stabbing him in the back, you know, and this is going to be very interesting to see where this one goes, you know, because will Trump, at least, will he wake up now and see and realize that you don't take on these people as your friends? They will stab you in the back if they need to. And we'll just see now where this goes. It's going to be very interesting, you know. It's interesting to see that kind of parallel to what's going on with Ramaphosa, because he got too friendly with the Jews, and you know, the ANC now are getting a little bit upset.
I think it could make for exciting fireworks, and it takes the shift away from the common white, you know. Mm-hmm. If the common whites could just keep their heads down and we can just focus on our unity and our survival, I think this could be very exciting. And what I want to say about Trump is the basic idea for the impeachment comes from the Jew who's apparently the guy who predicts presidential the winners of elections the best, and he's said that an impeachment, even a failed impeachment, will harm Trump's choices in the next election. Yeah. So that's the game plan. But yes, I agree. It's totally Jewish. Now the thing about Trump that concerns me about Trump is I've watched how Trump is still totally in this love fest with Jews. And one thing that I've wondered is, you know, with this Jeffrey Epstein pedophilia and all this weird shit, Epstein was a good buddy of Trump. I've wondered if the Jews have got some kind of sexual dirt on Trump.
Possibly.
That is the reason why Trump is running like crazy to save Israel. Mm-hmm. Because there's dirt that can destroy him.
Possibly.
That bothers me. Because if that is the case, then it means he's just going to be in a Jewish love fest no matter what, because he's got to save his balls, literally.
Yeah. Just on another side note, Jan, as you know, South Africa won the Rugby World Cup there last month. And, you know, fair play to them. They were the best team and they won, okay? That was a great achievement and all that. And, of course, the country celebrated. And I suppose there's a bit of good news. People were happy and all the rest, whatever race you were. But I thought it was funny that within a week of that happening, a guy from the EFF came out and said that the Springboks, which is the name given to the South African rugby team, they should be dismantled. And everyone went fucking crazy. Everybody. Now, what's your take on that? And I know South Africa, rugby in South Africa has always been a white man's game. The last time they won the World Cup, I think it was in 2007, there was about maybe two blacks playing for them. Now it's over half the team, I think, are black. But what's your take on that? Because it did kind of, you know, at least kind of unify people a little bit, you know, which is what sport kind of does in a way. And these people celebrate. And then for this guy to come out and say this, I mean, he shot himself in the foot from what I can see. So what was your take on that?
Okay, my take on the race issue. First of all, I never follow sport because I don't bother. Mm-hmm. But the rugby used to keep a lot of the Boers and Afrikaans people happy. But as the years have gone by and they've watched their sport becoming more non-white, I don't know if they're such close supporters as they used to be. I didn't actually know about this incident, but I will tell you something about South Africa. This is also something that came out of that lecture that I've given 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, which I still want to turn into a video. But what I will say is this. If it wasn't for Jews, liberals, and communists trying to dictate the politics of South Africa and Africa, and if whites were allowed to negotiate with the non-whites on whatever basis we saw fit, you would be surprised at how many times blacks and other non-whites would support whites. In fact, when I was in Canada, I said to people, and this is why I also want to, I also talk more and more about the recolonization of Africa and even seizing Africa for the white race as future projects. I want to tell you that if politics in Africa is becoming so strange, and Jews and liberals have been the driving force in trying to ingratiate themselves with the black politicians, sucking up to them and focusing on the blacks at the top. But the blacks at the bottom, the common blacks, also have their own views, and they are watching things. And when I used to work for the bank, the last job that I had, I used to sometimes listen to the blacks talking about their own politicians, and the blacks would even be negative about their own politicians. Like the blacks would be radical. They'd be wanting to like seize stuff, some of them. And then they'd say, but you know, our politicians are useless. They just never get anything done. And the blacks themselves have got their own despondency with their own politicians. Sometimes, maybe in quite a number of cases, the blacks actually are more radical than their politicians. Other times their politicians are out of step with how the blacks see things. The blacks do not always see the whites as a problem, and the only whites that they will really focus their attack on are the, quotes, racist whites. But other than that, the blacks in many ways don't see whites as a threat or in a negative light. And in actual fact, in Africa, you'll be quite surprised, in Africa, how many black women want to marry white men. Mm-hmm. That is actually another thing that is growing in Africa. Right. And that must tell you that their view of whites is not always in sync with what the communists want on the one hand or what the liberals want on the other hand. There is a lot of chaos and confusion in this. And I would say that if whites in Africa, if the whites of Africa could operate as a group, and if the whites of Africa could, first of all, gain the confidence to stand together as a group, as a team, mm-hmm. that we could deal with the blacks in ways that you would not be able to imagine. I personally, for example, as a result of my stuff that I used to write about Zimbabwe, I mean, I just had a website. I was writing about Zimbabwe. I was telling the truth about Zimbabwe, and I was always supporting anybody who was an enemy of Mugabe. A couple of years ago, a black member of parliament from Zimbabwe came to Johannesburg. And by the way, he had a white chauffeur. mm-hmm. So the black guy with his white chauffeur and his personal assistant, who is black, came and asked to meet me. We met, and the black asked me for 2 million rand to sponsor some stuff that he was doing in Zimbabwe. First of all, I wish I had 2 million rand. Second of all, if I had 2 million rand, I wouldn't spend it on a black politician. There are many things I would be doing with it to push my racial agenda forward. But that will give you an idea. I'm a racist, and here is a black politician from another country coming to me, asking me for money. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that among the blacks themselves, there are hatreds that are new, hatreds that have been created under black rule. There are blacks who hate other blacks, and there are blacks who hate what the ANC has done in other countries. I want to tell you that politics is so crazy. Politics is so crazy that if the whites could just regain their own confidence in themselves here in South Africa, and we could operate as a white team and as a white force, that you would be shocked at what could happen. And it will not be in any way like what the liberals and Jews are telling you. It will not work like that at all. You could find whites and blacks striking deals that would make every liberal say, no, this is wrong. This is wrong. They would hate it. But blacks would. Blacks, and you know what? The desperation of the blacks under black rule is increasing. And the blacks only have two options. They either got to fight the whites, or they got to team up with the whites. So
yeah, that's the option. That's the choice,
So those things are all possible. But how you get to that is a very interesting thing, and it can only be done. What I'm trying to make whites understand here is you got to stop with the liberal line. You got to cut out that crap. You got to adopt the attitude of Hitler. You got to stand up for your own people, for fuck's sakes. Stand up for your own people and tell the truth. And everybody thinks that the way of getting to the blacks is to be a cuck, to go and to suck up to them and bend down to them. You won't find a single white man, you won't find a single white politician in the entire Western world willing to stand up and defend his race. Never. There's not one of them.
No.
Not even Trump. There's not one white politician in any Western country in the world willing to stand up and defend whites as a group and say, listen, this is our group. We defend our group. This is why we defend ourselves. And we do believe that we are capable of this and so on. You will not find that. But I will tell you that the path forward, I believe, is a path of strength. First of all, you must have confidence in yourself, get your group together, get your group in sync, and be willing to stand together. Have your defense organizations. So if somebody comes and threatens your group with violence, you say, hey, you're threatening us with violence, we'll meet you. You want to fight? We'll meet you. I can give you examples where Julius Malema has backed down and gone away from possible instances where he could have met up with whites. And I will tell you, if whites regained their confidence and could stand firm and act as an entity, as a racial entity that defends itself and defends its people and stands firm, that I think that you will get blacks coming from all corners of Africa, beating a path to our door. And furthermore, I will tell you, there's a secret. This secret is going to remain a secret. But I will give you a hint of the secret. There are blacks in South Africa, and there are things that have happened in South Africa that nobody saw coming. Nobody saw it coming. The ANC itself could not stop it. Nobody looked at it. But in this xenophobia stuff, inside that xenophobia stuff lies hidden something that not a single political commentator in the world has spotted. And I've spotted it, and I've talked to blacks, and I've looked at it. I am not going to tell you what this thing is, but I'm going to tell you that let anybody try race war in South Africa. I'm 100% game for race war in South Africa. There are things that could happen in South Africa in a race war that nobody will see coming. It will blow people's minds. And I
will this be a battle of Blood River 2.0?
I think that you're going to find that the whites are in stronger positions than you think. And that the way that blacks themselves will respond if whites play the game right, the way that blacks will respond will be different to what you think. I'm just going to tell you that I look at Africa and I'm telling you there's opportunity in Africa, but the whites need to regain their confidence. And we are such a small group. If we can get some of the backing of our race, and mm-hmm. and I have had one or two whites from overseas even say to me, if there's a race war, call me, I'm going to join you. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, we whites are not finished in Africa. The last, this place is going to become ever more insane. And mm-hmm. the good news is that the liberals, the Jews, cannot solve it. The rich cannot solve it. The super rich, the Jews and the liberals, I don't care how many billions or hundreds of billions of dollars they give to the blacks of South Africa. The problems are insoluble. If the whites could just stick together, we could be the linchpin that changes the whole game plan. But we have to stand as a group, and we've got to stand firm as a group, meaning that we are even willing to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if you can get to that point, this game is going to be turned on its head, mm-hmm. and the possibilities that exist are beyond belief. And if you think this is the last step of the white man in Africa, you're wrong. Whites could still take back huge chunks of Africa. Huge chunks of Africa. I'm absolutely convinced of this. And I'm telling you that the entire liberal paradigm that Jews have created about how race is and how it works, total flop. And do you know that in the Democratic Alliance, which is a liberal Jewish political party that they originally created for whites, they then tried to bring blacks into the DA. Do you know that the blacks and the Jews ended up fighting, and that eventually the Jewess, Helen Ziller, had to seize control from the blacks? Because if she didn't take control, the whole thing was going into total meltdown. What I'm trying to say to you is that Jews aligning with non-whites as their plan to destroy whites, this thing has limitations. And you're going to be shocked when you realize that whites might actually yet gain control of non-whites.
Yeah.
That Jews are failing here in South Africa with the blacks, like you cannot believe. And the Jews themselves don't seem to have realized it. And I'm watching it with great fascination. And finally, the blacks of South Africa, the blacks of South Africa are anti-Semitic. They hate Israel. They hate Israel.
Yeah, I know that. Israel. I've heard that. Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to tell you, this game is not over, my friend. Far from over.
Yeah, and there are stirring words there, man. That is stirring words. And let's watch this with interest. Let it unfold and see. Let's see what happens. And we'll, you know, I really would like to see the white people of South Africa really stand up against this and really do something really powerful and positive, and we'll watch this with interest, you know. So I'd like to thank you for coming on. Great stuff. We could talk for more, I'm sure we can, you know, we could. But your website, historyview.com, and you have another one as well, African Crisis, is that the one?
Yes, I've got three websites now. My main one is historyreview.com. Mm-hmm. AfricanCrisis.info, and maybe I'd like to ask you if I can just pop you the links. And then I've got a new little shop called white-shop.biz.
Oh yes, yeah, your little shop.
And,
yeah, go
ahead, and it's my little shop is PayPal free, and it's basically Jew free. So my attempt, it's my proof of concept. What I'm trying to do with my little shop is I'm trying to prove that we can trade with each other without the Jews fucking with it, without the Jews stopping it. And that is the experiment that I'm busy with. And I just launched it recently. Jew-free.
We wish you the best of luck with that, man. We really do, all of us. So, good man. You just keep up what you're doing, man. It's great, great stuff. Great to hear this, you know. And again, thank you for coming on. We'll get you back on again the new year sometime. And yeah, listen, have a great Christmas, man. 2020, have a great new year. It's going to be interesting for all of us, not just in South Africa, but for all of us. And we've got to stand together now. It's, you know, the gloves are coming off, guys. Gloves are coming off. The game is up.
Yes.
Yes. You know, we're pushing back. We're pushing back. And I can feel that these guys are kind of on the retreat now. And they're trying to bring in all sorts of nonsense. And all we have to do is just tell them to F off. Okay?
Yes.
That's it. That's all we have to do. Very simple. That's it. Before I go, I just want to say that I did a pre-recorded show with Andy Hitchcock and Paul English this morning, talking about the reserving all rights, the way we can deal with the system with words and you know, protect ourselves within the law system and do it that way. Very powerful stuff that I've been learning and Graham has been learning as well. And we did a good show on that today, and so that will be going out live tomorrow at 3 p.m. GMT, which I think is at 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time in North America. Or if you're listening to it, Jan, that'll be 5 o'clock for you. But it'll be uploaded on Andy's website and on Mammy's later, just after that. So have a listen to that, folks, if you're interested in that type of stuff. I think it's something that we need to do. It's we have to look at solutions, how we can beat this. And we have, you know, again, it's just intelligence, it's logic and reason, which we're all coming to now. We're figuring stuff out, and we can fight back, and we can do it. We can do it peacefully. We don't want to go to war. We don't want to see people getting killed. So let's see where we go with that. So have a listen to that show tomorrow, folks, and we'll leave you at that. Jan, again, thanks very much, man, for coming on. Great stuff. That was the fastest 2 hours I think I've ever done. It really was.
Well, I hope
so much information there, you know. It really was
excellent.
Yeah, and we'll get together in the new year sometime, and we'll talk again more. Okay, so listen, have a great Christmas season and new year and all that, and we'll talk again. And folks, yeah, we'll be back again same time next week, and we'll see you then. So.
Goya, I'm not.